And welcome to Inside Baseball with Old Chestnut. I'm Liam Allen with my friend Morris Sachs. How you doing, MB?
I'm doing great. But before we go anywhere, anyone who skipped the beginning of that song, I want you to go back and listen to it, okay? That's an incredible version of that song. And we'll wait, okay? We'll wait. Take your time.
I'll post the link on the Twitter. 20 minutes long. Don't hijack it already. Okay. Don't start with before we start. Okay. Because today I want to do before we start. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have an obligation. All right. First and foremost, I'm your friend. But second of all, I have an obligation to the audience, to the paying subscribers. Okay.
Yes.
To not only open the show with that, okay? Trust me, I lost sleep over that, okay? And I went through the library and I came with other alternatives, but with the lead medal at an all-time high.
Ah, golden age. I
I
got
will
it.
be damned if I'm not opening the show
Okay.
2 weeks. And I'll tell you what, I will continue to open the show as long as that fucking thing keeps going up. Okay.
Okay, fair enough. You know what
But
you
I'm
said?
not done. I'm not done.
Okay, all right.
Don't you fair enough me yet, Sax. Okay. This really bothers me, dude, because again, I'm your friend, and maybe it doesn't torment you, and you can lie to me in the audience and say it doesn't torment you. But that, it burns me, dude, because here's what it comes down to. And this has been the case with you with other things. And don't interrupt me, okay? You were just way early, period. Stop, okay? There's no more discussion. I don't want to hear it from 13D, Gabe Cal, any of the gold people, the haters, the lovers, the people that what about the gold people? Here's the bottom line. You were what, a quarter, a half early, 6 months, pick a number, X date. But whatever it was, and everyone that listens to the show knows because it was 2 years ago. We needed this. We needed this. We needed, we really needed this like 12, 16, 18 months ago. Okay. How many, the poor paying subscribers, our listening audience, everyone that listens that had to suffer through the gold talk for eons where we talked about this godforsaken 10 pounds of shit in a 5 pound sack, the lead, the Chinese, the Russian, the COVID, the Bitcoin, the interest rate, the whole fucking web that was woven. The bottom line was it was just a little bit early. Okay. So I it, that it, it, you can tell me that it doesn't bother you. But you can't look me, and you're not looking me in the eye right now. You can't look me in the eye and tell me that you don't take a peek at that every day and say, ugh.
I do. I'm
Okay.
glad you brought it up. Hey, first of all, I need to explain one thing to you politely, as a junior member of the research team. Early is the same as being wrong.
I know. I
Okay.
know. I know.
But don't let me not show my appreciation for your remembering of it. And it absolutely drives me fucking crazy. I'm human too, but that's just how this business is. And I've learned to accept that. I don't know what makes me think of this story, but I'll tell it anyway. At one point, there was a lot of pressure on me to hire a bunch of traders. I think the management of the firm realized that, you had a couple of guys making the vast majority of the money, and every day when they went home, they could go somewhere else. So, and if the revenue producers were to leave, those managers who didn't produce revenue weren't going to be getting those seven-figure bonuses. So they figured we better get more traders in here to reduce the risk of any one individual leaving. So anyway, we go through this whole thing of trying to hire traders, which is a difficult thing nonetheless. I found one guy over in England, and he talked his way into getting transferred to Greenwich. It was sort of surreptitious. I didn't really know what was going on. I wasn't in favor of it. The next thing I know is like it was in motion, and it was too much energy to get the train to stop. So I said, all right, fine. So he moves his family to Greenwich. He gets the standard package. And the one point we make to him is your housing in the States is covered. We're paying for it. So do not rent or sell your home back in the UK. Do you understand that? Yes. Okay. So doesn't perform, we let him go. I've told you this story before. We're in the room, and I said, look, we're gonna let you go. Sorry it didn't work out. Here's Mike. he'll tell you what you want, kind of thing. And then I get up to leave, and he starts giving me this noise about, you know, I rented my house, I got nowhere to live. And I'm like, listen, buddy, we told you not to do that. But the point I'm trying to make here is what I said to the fellow, which is there is no business in the world where you can turn up, put up no money of your own, and you got a chance to walk out making $1 million. So that does not come without risk. Okay. And the risk is, in this case, you fucked yourself. So don't tell me about you did this or that. That's just the nature of the deal. Why does it happen? Why do I bring it up now? Because that's what I signed up for. Like, I know going in, I'm going to make a zillion bad decisions. Okay. Here's one, and this is terrible. So I found out this morning, one of the members of my climbing party when we did the Matterhorn died yesterday in a helicopter accident in not Zermatt, but somewhere near Zermatt. Okay. Dead. Wife, daughter, in a helicopter. Now, this guy was a professional guide and he was guiding clients. But a helicopter in the mountains, okay, unless it's a rescue operation, you know, that's a choice you make. And with the winds up there and the helicopter, it's not the safest thing in the world. Now, but people do it in a very, very popular thing for the wealthy class. Is to do these backcountry ski trips, right? They'll rent the helicopter, they'll get dropped off somewhere, and they get, you know, 100,000 vertical of untracked powder, and it's supposed to be epic, right? Well, you know, things go wrong there, right? Because it's untracked, you have avalanche risk, and so. About a month ago, one of our friends calls me up, and I can tell already it's going to be a woe is me phone call, and he says, "I feel terrible. What's wrong?" Well, I was skiing backcountry, and I skied into a tree well, which is a snowboarder. You know that could be death,
Spent a long
right?
time in there, yeah. Yeah.
Well, for those who don't know, when you get a lot of snow around a tree, it forms like a pocket, and there's nothing there but little bits of snow and air. So what happens is, if you're above the tree line, you don't see it, but once you snowboard or ski over it, the weight, you know, lets you drop down the hole. And what causes the problem is, for a snowboarder, you can't get out of your bindings, so you're literally stuck there. For a skier, you can probably get out of the bindings, but you're probably disoriented upside down, and it's unlikely anybody saw you go in. And unless somebody notices it, you're gonna freeze to death or suffocate, probably suffocate. So my friend is telling me how he went in a tree well, he got all banged up. Fortunately, his friends saw him go in, they dug him out. And then he says to me, "But don't tell my wife." And I'm like, "Are you fucking kidding me? Like, you're looking for me
What
to."
happens next time when they're gonna send the search? They're not sending the search party out for you, pal.
I just, you know, people make decisions about things. And they don't really think them through. I don't know how that got to the gold. I understand that I got it in my mind that I thought it was going to go. And I was really early, and so I was really wrong. But the point I want to make is to why I stopped trying to belong it. Is I had conversations with real people. Okay, I'm not talking about chuckleheads. I'm talking about real people and the stories they came up with. Okay, story, the best story. JP Morgan and the Federal Reserve are conspiring to keep the price of gold down.
I like
this
that.
This is a quote from someone that publishes a newsletter that's $10,000 a year. I remember having this conversation with one of our, I'm sorry?
It's quite the operation they're running.
How do you respond to, why would Jamie Dimon conspire with the Fed to keep the price of gold down? I mean, maybe, I don't know. Then the whole nonsense about there's not enough physical gold in the vaults in London to cover the, and I just decided, you know what? I tried. I was the chump at the table. I probably lost more money on that trade than any other trade in my life. So it's not like I got fond memories of how this thing worked out, but I just decided it wasn't for me. And as Leslie would like to say, I just picked another wall to bang my head against.
Yeah.
And a little hat tip to Leslie, who pointed out that they've now 100 payroll numbers in a row they've gotten wrong. I know it's not 100, but
dude, you believe that? Do you believe that only 3% of America is unemployed? Do you believe that? I think 9 out of 10 people have a job. 9.7 people have a job. Because I don't. I don't believe that number. There's no way. There's no way 9 out of 10 people are fully employed. I do like a poll. I go through like I'll do the bike. I do the bike group. I got 100 people on the bike ride. You're gonna tell me 99 of them have a job? They're going to work on Monday? Because when I drive by the unemployment ride, I see 50 of them on the unemployment ride. Okay, they're not all retired. There's a lot of people laid off, underemployed. I don't know that number to me. The idea that only 3%,
right,
unemployment.
So first of all, I think I lean in your camp. Okay, there's so many different ways to look at that number, whether it's the U3, the U6, the hourly earnings, da 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 da. What I want to come back to is what I've touched on from time to time over the last number of months. This data, okay, is fraught with sampling errors that they probably just figured out what the GDP was from 5 years ago, right? So there's constant revisions to this stuff. And I just don't like to rely on it. That's number one. Number two, and this relates to the market in general. We've come through a once in a century situation with the COVID. And what I mean by that is, you know, the last time you really, I think, I have to be careful because I know people hold me to these things. The last time you had this type of situation was the flu, the Spanish flu pandemic around World War I, right? Okay. So we had this massive rupture to the economy, which has forever changed people's behavior to varying degrees, arguably, but people behave differently now. And so that has knock-on effects that we haven't been able to ascertain, and the data hasn't been able to stick around long enough to develop seasonal adjustments and all of those things. So for me, I know it's a little bit silly because every week, again, we urge caution, but you know, we go out on a limb from time to time. What I've really done recently is I've taken everything that isn't nailed down. I'm just sitting in 3-month bills. And I understand that in 6 months, the long bond might be 200 basis points lower in yield. It might be. But at a 455, that would put it at a 255. Yeah, I just don't see that. And so to answer your question, do I believe that whatever number you pick on, do I believe it's right? No, I vehemently agree it's wrong. To the extent, I don't know. But I saw, I think it was on Kevin Muir's newsletter, the portfolio manager said the hardest thing to do is to do nothing. And I'm quite content doing nothing. What surprised me with the market behavior on Friday, I mean, the number, right or wrong, much stronger than expected. The reaction in the bond market was exactly what I would have expected. The front end gets pummeled, but actually, I have to double check this. The curve was either unchanged or maybe modestly steeper. I didn't run the analytic on it, so I apologize for that. But the curve didn't move very much. But, you know, the long end got whacked as much as the front end, let's say. Not terribly surprising, given they'd have eases priced in. What surprised me was an interest rate sensitive commodity like gold went up. A little surprising. And the stocks, which are supposed to like lower rates, ripped. And, you know, I'd said, I think, earlier in the week or weeks about how these typical correlations are breaking down. And that, to me, usually precedes something bad. And so consequently, you know, with the 3 month bill again being a 5 3/8, I don't think that's a bad place to hang out. So we'll just have to wait and see. Did you feel the earthquake?
I did not. I got chipped out of it.
So I was sitting on the couch and all of a sudden the house starts shaking and I'm like, oh, that must be an earthquake. Okay, it's over. But you might find this interesting. Every time we've had an earthquake in this area of a 4.8 or higher in the Richter scale, okay, within 18 months, we've had a bear market in stocks and they've dropped at least 20%.
Come on.
No, I made that up. I just wanted to get everybody's.
You might, I feel like the last one was like 100 years ago. So like, it wouldn't feel, it feels like I wouldn't be that off.
September 5th of 1944, there was a 5.9.
Okay.
And actually the market, I went and checked just to see, maybe I got lucky on one. Market rallied.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's nothing new. So I was hoping you were going to ask me about coming back, because we're back in Greenwich now after leaving Arizona. I'd like to say it's great to be back, but I feel like it's the fucking gulag here. It's gray out and cold. And Arizona is 3 hours behind, right?
Mm-hmm.
3 hours earlier there. So this morning, because of the time change, I slept. I kind of overslept, and Cheryl comes in. And she says, "MB, get up! It's 9 o'clock," and I'm like, "I'll just lie here for a while." She's good. She got a podcast at 9:30, and I'm like, "Oh fuck!" So I jump up, you know, brush my teeth, I get a cup of coffee, and I'm like, "I don't know if that's right exactly," and I'm thinking, what am I going to talk about? I haven't had a chance to think about anything. And that's why I sent you the text. It's like 2:30. Like,
Yeah.
okay. So that's a great way to start the day, thinking you got 27 minutes to put together a podcast, which you know is genuinely researched and analyzed.
Yeah.
But one of the things I disparage Greenwich all the time, right? You know, like there isn't a single restaurant here that the food's any good, and the people are creeps, and you know, everything's a dick measuring contest. So as an example, this is my welcome back to Greenwich. On Tuesday, a guy comes to my house in Arizona, and it's one of these high-end car shipping companies.
Yeah. They got through the front gate. They made it through the front gate.
That exactly. Same guy. He says, "How you doing? You look much better." So we load up the car in Arizona, and it's like Tuesday. And I said, "That's great." I said, "What do you think? A couple of weeks?" He goes, "No, I've got a lot of stuff already loaded. I'll be at your house on Friday morning." And I said, "Great, just text me what time, and I'll be out there." So you know where I live, but to the people at home, there's main thoroughfares in Greenwich: Round Hill Road, where all the criminals live; Lake Avenue, which is where like the old money lives; North Street, which is heading towards kind of Stamford. And anyway, so I live off of this Lake Avenue on a small lane that is created in the horse and carriage days, right? So there's no way a semi is getting down this lane. So what happens is the guy parks on the side of the road on Lake Avenue, which is quasi busy. It's at the top of a hill. So if you're blowing down Lake Avenue at 80, you know, as you crest this hill, you're going too fast if there's, okay. So anyway, the guy parks the trailer on the side of the Lake Avenue, and we put down cones, you know, the orange cones, all the way to like the bottom of the hill. So anyone who doesn't know there's something going on, okay. Yeah. So he backs out this Lamborghini. Thing just sounds like a pussycat, right? And then he backs out my car. And as I see somebody driving the other direction, it's a woman who I would say in my mind identifies as the wife of a Morgan Stanley partner. Okay. Early to mid 40s, fake blonde, right? Range Rover.
Range Rover. I knew.
Pulls down the window, gives me the finger. Gives me the fucking finger.
Wow.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Welcome to fucking Greenwich, you know?
Wow, the nerve of you to get your car unloaded. What is she? She probably had to slow down for a minute. Wow.
It's crazy. Like when we would do the gimbals, and people would be honking at us on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Sunday morning, I'd be like, "What are you? You're late for church?"
Yeah.
You know? And then the cussing at us and stuff like that. So I'm a little disappointed. It would have meant the life of me and my family. But it's almost a shame that earthquake didn't splinter and a good chunk of the East Coast just fall into the Atlantic Ocean.
I agree about a lot of that. I do. Oh, man. Welcome back to Greenwich. Yeah, welcome back. Yeah, dude, it's 44. It's cloudy. The stock market's an enigma. Welcome home.
So am I to assume that my idea of renaming us Maverick and Goose got no traction?
Didn't take off.
Didn't take off? Okay, how about this?
Get it?
I got a new idea. We start our own lifestyle brand.
Okay.
Like Gwyneth Paltrow or Meghan Merkel. Not Meghan Merkel. She's the German, right? Meghan, whatever her name is. You know, the actress who married the king.
I don't know who you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about. Well, anyway, we were having dinner with some friends, and I was coming up with ideas, the lifestyle brand. And the first one, the one that received the most votes, was a candle that says, "This candle smells like my dick."
So this is what you did at dinner? This, your wife? I can imagine the look from Cheryl, okay?
They loved it. They loved it.
Yeah, they were four glasses of wine deep. Okay, please. They're entertaining you. They're a gentle old man with bad ideas. Just, you know, wink and nod and say, laugh at his jokes. Okay.
Okay, well, so I guess you don't want to hear about the concept of the squatty potty,
no,
right?
No, Lord.
No? We came up with our own version. It's not the squatty potty. It's the stool.
Look.
It's the same performance and half the price.
Look, people came to hear you talk about the bond market, okay? They don't they want to hear Ted Williams talk about baseball, okay? They don't want to hear about Ted's crackpot.
Okay, well, I mean, it's April. Christmas is right around the corner. These things sell out. So if you're interested, contact Liam.
Okay.
Put your name on the mailing list. Okay. The bond market. It's interesting again. It's really interesting again. And the Fed is definitely in play. The thing that is going to frustrate most people, and would have frustrated me had I not been through this many times, is you're just going to get random moves of epic proportion, because you're not going to have anything definitive, right? Like their 2% inflation goal, their 3%, that's their favorite measure. But if you start stripping out this, that, or the other thing, you know, you're going from number to number. I do understand from one of our friends who's in the hedge fund business that there's been a lot of anarchy and people quitting for losing money, being fired for losing money, which I love. I still believe there's time for those hedge fund managers to go the right path, follow the Lord of your choice. And there's time for redemption, to do something with your life instead of wantonly taking money from hapless investors. And I was kind of curious. I think I know the answer. I'm pretty sure I know the answer. Who's lost more money? The people who invested with Cathie Wood or Madoff?
Cathie Wood.
Yeah, easy, right?
Oh, yeah. They signed up for it, too.
Well, the Madoff, most people got most of their money back.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for those people. Sorry about that.
Well,
I don't feel bad for the Wilpons. Fred Wilpon? All those other people that doubled down?
That was the Madoff people.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, well, the Wilpons owned the Mets, and then they supposedly had a lot of money tied up with Madoff, and they had to sell the Mets to cover.
They sold the Mets to that criminal Steve Cohen.
I was just going to say, enter Stevie Cohen, who said 4-day work week coming soon. That's what Steve made the headlines this week.
So how soon before he gets divorced? Now that he, what's that stuff called? Zimpec? Ozempic?
Oh, Zempo, yeah.
Yeah, did you see picture of him? He's lost like 100 pounds.
Oh, has he really? That's got to be weird.
Oh, yeah. So that's bad news for wife number four. You know? Yeah, you look at things like that. I was having this discussion with friends who are staying with us that have some Turkish ancestry. And so there's something going on there where Erdogan is the president and he got voted out. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really necessarily mean he's out. It's right. One of those deals. It's like whoever controls the military will end up running the country.
Yeah.
But we were talking about how, and I remember we spoke about this. Erdogan said, "I don't want any Bitcoin trading." And I think I predicted what's going to happen is they're going to go into some small town. They're going to take a bunch of kids who are trading Bitcoin. They're going to take them to the center of town. They're going to cut their right hand off. That's how it's going to go. And I remember you making the same face now that you did then. And I was wrong. They didn't take them to the center of town and cut their hands off. They went and they grabbed them from their homes, and they've never been seen again. So at this point, it's like, take my hand, please.
Yeah.
But what happens here, and it's a problem with the civilized society, because the punishment doesn't fit the crime. So, for instance, I talked about this a week or two ago. There was this, the Dana-Farber Cancer Research Institute has some association with Harvard, and they discovered they were falsifying cancer research. Now, cancer is very personal to me. I've had many of my family members with that affliction, and so I take it very personally. So you're taking something that affects, it's at least half the population, right? Because half the population are women, and some ginormous percentage of women get breast cancer. And granted, the survival rate is north of 90% and all of that. But, you know, that ain't, if you're the one getting diagnosed, you don't feel like it's 95%, okay? And so these people who are falsifying this research, which is, it's twofold. One is they're putting out information which is wrong, but they're also taking money away that could be used for legitimate research. And so what's going to happen to these people? Nothing.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe it'll show up badly on their resume. I don't know. Maybe they end up flipping burgers at In-N-Out Burger. I don't know. I mean, to disparage In-N-Out Burger, but it just, we don't seem to have this thing dialed in right. You got guys sitting in jail for carrying small amounts of marijuana.
You want to do what El Salvador did? What's your thoughts on El Salvador?
You know, I hate to admit it, I'm not up to speed on that.
I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. He adopted Bitcoin and he sent the military into the streets and cleaned up the gang members by the millions and put them all in a prison. He locked up every single gang member in El Salvador. He either killed half of them or arrested the other half, and he's turned El Salvador from a lawless hellhole into law and order. But he's got the Bitcoin thing, which is outdoor. It might be very progressive. But yeah, his law and order tactics are not to be argued with. So that's the other end of the spectrum. I mean, that's one model of one route that you could take. You could go the El Salvador route, where, like, you know, forget about, you know, crime and, or, you know, trial and juries. They'll just, you know, people disappear.
It's tough. You know, the democracies don't, you know, they don't last forever, just because everyone gets to vote. People who don't have skin in the game get to vote. You know, we can debate what skin in the game means. I'm not prepared to have that on the comments section, but, you know, you're an American, you get a vote. And so, you know, the way they set things up was, you know, the Electoral College, so you couldn't get a runaway with just, you know, a populist movement, right? You're supposed to separate things a bit. But I don't know. It's sad, because you go to once great cities, Chicago, New York, California. It's not great. You know, it's not great.
Good. Let me, can I go back to the market stuff real quick before we, since now we've made it to the crime-ridden cities. Since we've reached the crime-ridden cities portion of the
please,
old man.
Please. Please, I'm still upside down from my travel.
I just want to welcome Fed President Neil Kashkari to higher for longer / no rate cuts this year island. So welcome Neil. Okay.
Yeah.
I know I don't is he a voter? I don't have the list in front of me. I'm not
I
sure.
Believe not.
Yeah, so it's there like, you know, so okay. Obviously,
it's
you know,
okay.
That's okay.
You know, I still have a little grudge against him because he was supposed to come to a fundraiser in Truckee, Nevada, Truckee, California. I guess that's California.
Yeah.
And I was looking forward to speaking with him, but he was a no-show. He did also say something which I thought was uniquely smart for him. I've never really been a big fan. He talked about someone was giving him an argument about why Bitcoin's, you know, getting ready to be a real thing. And they used Amazon. He said, you know, 20 years ago, nobody heard of Amazon and nobody bought a book on the internet. And Kashkari's like, yeah, and 20 years later, Amazon is Amazon. And there still isn't a, you know, a legal, lawful society that has found a need for a cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest disappointments in my lifetime as an observer of financial markets is the fact that the government hasn't dealt with that. Look, I understand if you're living in a foreign country with huge currency inflation, it's a currency, okay? So is gold, so is lead for that matter. But in the United States, where we do have rule of law, it may take a while, you know, I don't like the notion of people being able to transfer money without making sure there's some legitimacy to it. So there was a fellow, and I'm not going to get this anywhere near being right, so I apologize in advance. But that whole thing with Goldman, with that guy from Malaysia.
Yeah, the MB1, MH.
Right, right. So what they were doing was transferring a lot of money into lawyers' escrow accounts. And that way the authorities wouldn't be able to track these things. And so what happens? You know, it's used for nefarious purposes.
That's a fascinating story, dude.
It's really good. When I wonder if DJ Sal played at any of those gigs.
Please. Dude, there were big time people involved. Top of the iceberg. Leo DiCaprio's name comes up in that story.
It does. Well, that's a lot of fun to hang with. We're going to a party tonight in the city. I think there's a shot he might be there.
I didn't want to bring this up, but you've this ties into the commercial real estate thing. If you got to move that building in the Bowery, I got an idea for you. Okay, you want to get a little buzz for that thing? This is how you do it. You got residential spaces in there?
No,
it's corporate offices. All right, fine. So you got to have an event there. You should have a charity event up on the top floor there. Okay.
Okay.
You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to shell out a nickel. All right. We'll get it all done. Okay. We got a chef, you know, EG, the guy that cooks with EG, he cooks. Okay.
Chris Rich.
Yeah.
Maybe also the lead guitarist at Don't Google it.
Deep Donkey Guitar.
Number one angle.
And they could maybe play like the late night set after the dinner, but you have like an art show, you have a nice dinner, you get boldface name. I got a couple boldface names. Like I could list off like a couple that we could, you know, that'll bring in the dollars and the headlines. And I've got the charity too. That we've got a charity that I have in mind that people they can't refuse. A certain number of people cannot refuse. If it was proposed, It's called the Wolf, as you can, it's called the Wolf Conservancy. Okay, there's a couple of big hitters that favor.
Yeah, I
So if
know.
you had a little wolf party down in the Bowery and you got 100 luminaries there, made a little charity, you got a little event. Next thing you know, maybe somebody notices this building and you get a little bit of buzz. I talk to my people at the Post. It gets put in page six, you know. You get a little press for the Bowery
My
building.
friend Target told me not to worry because he saw on 60 Minutes, apparently, that all of the old office buildings are crummy. So if you got a flashy new office building, you're going to do fine. And ours is flashy and new. And so okay. I'm rest assured that it's going to go well. I just, one of my partners says, yeah, everything's good. It just hoping for lower rates. And I'm like, I don't hope for something else.
Yeah, dude, lower rates are not on the horizon. Do you know mortgage rates went back up again? A chunk this week. Mortgage rates are back up.
Do you happen to know what a 30-year mortgage?
7.25, maybe 7.4. Yeah,
that's something enough. Like
that. Yeah. Yeah, and it's been there for a while. I also saw a funny a number about the amount of houses. Like, don't quote me on it, but like 1 in 3 was getting bought in cash.
Yeah, it's a very high number. Yeah, part of the problem for new home buyers is not just the rate on the mortgage; it's the fact that a lot of the existing homes are paralyzed because the owner has a below market rate. And if they sell, they have to, the mortgages aren't assumable. So they have to go out and refinance at a higher rate. And so the supply is not what it might normally be at this time of year. So I, again, vis-a-vis the market, I was surprised to see the gold continue to go up. I guess I should no longer be surprised to see the stock market go up because, you know, strong economy is good for stocks. Lower interest rates is good for stocks. You know, everything, the buybacks are good for stocks.
Well, what's bad for stocks? What like it feels like they've been looking for something for
me buying them. That would be about it.
Dude, you're just supposed to buy them every week, Morris. It's called dollar cost. That you just put a little money aside and just keep buying it, okay?
That's what my brother told me to do. And I think he told me that 20 years ago. And I could have been somebody.
That's what you're up against. You're up against 6 out of 10 guys who are going in saying, I'm just buying it. I'm just buying it. I'm just buying it.
Well, so here's what I'm up against, which isn't as big a deal as you'd like to think. So I have this book, I forget the name of it, it'll come to me. But it's a annual review, and it shows the history of stock market over various periods of time. And so if you say the stock market averages 8%, okay, well, if I picked the average stock, then I need to beat 8%. And now maybe I didn't beat 8%, okay, but maybe I ended up with 6%, but that 6% was tax-free. Then the 8%, if you sell it, you get a capital gain. It's not like the money has been sitting there doing nothing. The stock market is something that everybody can relate to. The bond market, I literally had, I told you, the Silver Leaf Club, I was having lunch with a Mayo surgeon, Mayo Clinic brain surgeon, having me explain to him about bonds. He says, I just don't understand bonds. I said, how can you can operate in somebody's brain. What is there to understand about a bond? You give them money, they give you money back. I mean, it's not that. But so that's why the stock part doesn't bother me so much. And that's why the gold thing doesn't bother me so much. These are decisions which I made, and they didn't work out. What bothers me is when I do something stupid. And the one that comes to mind was, there was that communications company that Leslie had told me about. It was like Straight Path or Smart Path or something. And they had all these licenses, and they were due to expire. So the stock had gotten beaten up. And for whatever reason, I remember this, I looked at who the holders were. There's a function on Bloomberg, HDS, and I saw this name. The name was Gilder Gagnon. I remember them just creaming things in the bond market, and Leslie liked it. So I bought a bunch of this stock, and it did nothing. And then lo and behold, you know, one day, AT&T buys them, and it I'd pick a number, doubles, triples, whatever. And I remember when I described this to you the first time, the quote was, I was so drunk with my success, I couldn't sell that fucking thing fast enough. And instead of thinking things through and saying, wait a minute, somebody else might come in and there might be a bidding war. No, did I think of that? No. And had I done that and taken a third of the profit or a quarter of the profit and bought some out of the money calls, that would have been a 100 bagger or something like that. That makes me mad. Or when I had the 24,000 euro dollar calls and the Fed eased out of nowhere, and within minutes they were gone, because it was like, oh my God, you made all this fucking money. Just give me the money without any, you know, maturity to say, hey, wait, let's just take stock in this a minute. Nobody expected the Fed to ease, and they just eased. You think maybe you could take a deep breath and see how this thing shakes out? No, they were, and Leslie was with me at the time, and I remember him saying something or whatever in a completely benevolent way, and I was just so wound up, because, you know, as a relative value trader, which even to this day is what I really am, okay, it's nickels and dimes and quarters over days and days and days and days. In these instances, I was like the Skid Row guy walking into the bodega and hitting $100,000 lottery. And just like them, I fucking blew it all, right? That's what makes me mad and disappoints me about myself. And the rest of the stuff, you know, you can't let it get you down. You have to understand that, you know, this is a business of making decisions with limited information, okay? And, you know, whether you're right 51% or 52 or 48, I don't know that the win percentage is necessarily the most important thing. It may be, but to me, the management of the positions is ultimately what, you know, comes down to whether you're a success or a failure, or a good trader or a great trader. And to me, why I think and was always so proud of what we did at Greenwich Capital was we had a very narrow focus, and we got every part of it right all of the time. And to create something with a near zero failure rate in any business is laudable. And, you know, I miss doing that. It'd be much cooler to be a swashbuckling speculator, which I would really love to be, but I, you know, I'm no good at it. Right?
Wouldn't last long.
Apparently not. But, you know, what I've discovered is I think in general, and I can tell because I've been watching my own positions P&L, I think we've had a pretty good call on rates generally over the last several years. And I feel really good about that. And in terms of our meeting, I think this has become part of my process. Because remember, I'm accustomed to sitting in a trading room with people that I know and respect, and you can hash ideas out in a I don't want to say safe space because that has got connotations, but in an environment where you're not going to feel stupid if you come up with something a little outside of the box and it doesn't work, you know. And to me, that's one of the big things where you see people trying to trade at home or in these pods, these things they call them pods now, or they're micro hedge funds. I don't know how well they communicate. And certainly what I really, really want to make sure we communicate without a shadow of a doubt is for the people who like to listen to us, who are not sophisticated, and even for those who are, you need to understand, you need to be committed to what your mission is. What is your objective? What are you trying to do? Because if you're not clear about that, you're not going to make the right decisions, because the decision you make is got to be based on where you want to end up. The notion of, well, I just want to make more money. Well, that's great, but, you know, okay, how are you going to do that? I know there were a group of guys, and I'll be very vague because I don't know that it's entirely legal, but this was back when there were more IPOs, okay? And so they set up dozens of accounts at various brokers. And so they would fight for allocations of the hot IPOs. And they opened up enough accounts at enough brokers and did enough whatever they needed to do that these guys were making a living off of this. Now, I don't know how to define living and all that, but I remember thinking, one, I wasn't convinced it was legal, but two, it just, to me, it wasn't a career. It wasn't something I was proud of, you know? And I look at certain things recently, and there's a meme going around with that idiot Rosenberg talking about how Benjamin Franklin had a phrase. It's something, I think it was Benjamin Franklin, said, never, never ruin an apology with an excuse. Okay. So in this meme where Rosenberg's saying, you know, oh, I wish I were a bull. And then at the end, he goes on to say about the bulls were just lucky, not smart. It's like, and same thing with Kathy Wood. Okay. Look, the good news, bad news about our business, and this I'm haranguing, but it's the beauty of the business. It's the numbers in front of you. Okay. There's no debate. That's the number, right? So I don't know. I get up in the morning. I look myself in the mirror. I go about my day. How does Kathy Wood get up in the morning and look in the mirror? I can tell you how. I've already diagnosed her. So she's a sociopath.
She believes in herself, okay?
Dave Rosenberg, how do you... He had one call 20 years ago, maybe, maybe. And he's made a living telling people that things are bad. And
the only time people hear about him is when nobody's heard of him anymore, okay?
Is that right?
Dude, guys my age, come on, please. Like, you're in a dark space on Twitter if you're getting memes with Rosenberg. I'm getting memes with Sydney Sweeney and other stuff going on. Don't Google it, okay? Just like, okay? Let me ask you one thing. Is the 2-year at 4.75 Is that a problem for stocks? Well, stocks can't, the S&P 500 can't sustain its current level because the 2 year. Is that a true statement? The S&P 500 can't sustain these levels with the 2 year at 4.475. Does that make sense? Because to me, it's apples and oranges, and I don't think that I feel like people have distinctly separated the two. They've seemed to have diverted.
So let me think about how to answer this for a second. Okay. The math in business is pretty simple. Okay. If you can borrow at 4.75 and earn 6, okay, you can do that a long time
All day long.
before you trouble. Okay. You might be able to do that forever. The problem comes in is when you borrow at 4.75 and you earn 4.25. That cannot go on forever. I don't know. I've seen for years any number of charts that show the price earnings ratio, where you buy it at, and then what the forecasted forward is, and all those things. I just don't know. What I do from time to time think about, and I think they're intertwined. One is when you buy an index fund, I know those are bad, whatever. This one's cap weighted, this one's market weighted, this one's high vol, low vol, blah, they've all got bells and whistles, right? But the focal point for me is, if you're in one of these funds, there's survivorship bias, meaning you didn't pick one stock and it went out of business. Okay. When the stock gets shitty enough, they kick it out of the fund. Okay. And because it's a fraction of the fund, now there's all sorts of concomitant issues with that. You know, next thing you know, Larry Fink has got the controlling vote for all sorts of problems with that. But you get the survivorship bias, which I think is very valuable. To answer your question about the rates, when I read that book, The Confusion of Confusions, that Portuguese book written in 14 something, it talks about how a business is sort of like a tree. And if a branch breaks and it dies, and a new branch forms in its place, right? So you have the United States with couple hundred million people. They get up and they go to work and they are productive and they produce things. So therefore, they're creating value. And as far as they create value for a firm, if the firm is well run, it will continue to grow until it's hit with some form of exogenous event. So, do I think 4.75 is a magic number? No, because because people become inured to the number, right? It gets baked into the cake. That's why the changes are what is relevant. And when you see historically, to get the economy to really change direction, you have to hit it with overwhelming force, which is what they did with the COVID. Okay. And it changed the Fed's balance sheet by trillions of dollars. Okay. That is what it takes to move something quickly. To move something slowly, which is what the Fed is trying to do, they're moving an ace in quarters. But arguably, it's 18 months to 2 years before those changes start to show up in the economy. So, do I think, you know, the stock market can maintain itself at 4.75? Yes or no? I don't know. The question to me isn't so much the rate, it's the behavior of the consumer, the national mood. Those things. I mean, if people decide, you know what, XYZ coming into the is going to be president, whoever it is. And I think I'm afraid, and they stop spending money. That is going to be a bigger effect and a more immediate effect than whatever the 2-year note rate is. I apologize for meandering and not giving a concise answer, but you know, monetary policy is a blunt instrument, and it does not, other than exogenous events like COVID, it doesn't happen quickly. And people are jonesing for the next trade, the next trade, the next trade, the next trade. And, you know, I have these IRA accounts that I have been unbelievably disciplined about. And it's shocking in the last 15, 18 years how much they've grown. And it's because I wanted to try that experiment of the compound interest. And guess what? It's great seeing you, buddy.
Hold on, you're not done. You're not done. You're not done.
Oh, I saw the red light go on. I thought I was supposed to get off stage.
There you go. I want to read you one thing before we go. All right. Payrolls up 300,000. Household survey up 498,000. Unemployment rate down. Wage growth still high. The source of this strength is easy financial conditions.
Yes.
We are sticking to our view that the Fed will not cut interest rates this year. Guess who said that? Just take a guess. I know you don't like asking trivia questions. Come on.
Torsten Slack?
My man. My man. So the payroll number hits 8:30. 8:30 Friday morning. All right, right? 8:30 Friday morning, we get our payroll number.
Yeah.
Doc Slock's sitting at the keyboard, ready to fire it off. Boom. Got the number, hot number. Surveys up. Unemployment rate is down. No cuts this year. Apollo's Torsten Slock, Friday morning, 9 o'clock.
Doc
Slock, my man. My man, Dr. Slock. How about this? All right, I'm going to rug pull him, though. How about, like, just for fun, we say they cut the rate in December. You get the little end of the year. Who knows what happens with the election in November? Maybe things are hunky-dory. The inflation's put to bed. Maybe you get a rate cut in December. Maybe December. But Doc Slock said, no, not this year, which, I mean, who we said that, I don't know, what, a month ago?
You said that. I'm still having, you know, eating my words, saying the Fed's going to tighten until they break something. That really hasn't panned out. You know,
Well, you said there's some anarchy. If there's anarchy unfolding
on
desks, okay, and there's some panic, and I don't want to say panic, but there's some unrest in the commercial real estate stuff, like, you know, Tesla missed a big delivery number. You know, there's things going on. I know that's apples, oranges, and pears, but
it's not really, it's part of the soup.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, what traders do, and you embrace this, is they interject their opinion with their view on the market, right? So, you know, if you're a weak economy guy, you can talk about Tesla missing its numbers. Well, I own an electric car. I'll never own another electric car. The reason why? It's because they have no residual value. Do you understand? Do you know about that?
Of course, dude. I've seen the Tesla graveyard. You don't have to explain it to me. It's a fucking Nokia 800 on wheels, okay?
Well, I'd like to drill down just a little. I mean, maybe you...
I've got hours for this, please.
Well, no, what the point I want to make about it's all electric vehicles. The chunk of the cost of the vehicle is the battery.
Yeah.
My understanding is when you have a used car, you don't know how much battery life is left. So you could buy a Tesla that's 4.5 years old, thinking it's great, and in a month find out that the battery's no good.
It's a Nokia 800. It's a Nokia 800.
Okay.
The big brick phone.
Number two, and this is something that I tried convincing my wife multiple times to no avail. My son-in-law says it once, short as a new car. That's how
I understand.
Parks around here. You know, these cars, even your beloved Ford F-150, are more like computers on wheels than cars. And so there's hundreds, if not thousands, of chips in these cars. And they're not meant to be driving around in all sorts of weather. And so there's a life on those things, too. Mm-hmm. Now, an electric car has more of that than the regular. Or that might not even be true either.
No, the electric cars are a mess in the cold weather.
Yeah. But I mean, whether the chips last longer in a conventional car or with an electric car, I don't know. Duenberg will know, our friends at Duenberg. I got a nice note from them, which I thought was very, very, very satisfying. And by the way, you know, as we move back from Arizona to New York or Connecticut, I didn't pack my pepper spray guns.
Oh.
And went on to Amazon. And not only have they doubled in price since we recommended them, they don't deliver to Connecticut.
Oh, please. Let me ask you a question. Did your electric bike arrive?
It did. It's sitting in the box in the garage. The world's best wrench is coming on Monday, and he's going to put it together. I was thinking about it. You know, I'm more particular about the man who works on my bicycles than my dentist.
Yeah, your life is in your, you're putting your life in his hands.
There's only one guy at this point I feel, well, there's a couple, but there's this one fellow, Nate, who you met Nate. We were in Leadville together.
I did. Yeah.
It's too bad the listeners can't understand the bond between Leadville brothers. Really.
It's
not quite, but it's as close to going to war as possible without going to war.
Right? Maverick and Goose, right?
That and the candle and the stool.
Yeah, please. Okay. All right, so I'll see you later. I'm going to come get my bike. Do you want to actually have Nate run through that before I come and get it? Okay.
Oh, sure. Of course.
I just make sure everything is tight.
It'll be Monday afternoon. So, yeah, keep those cards and letters coming. It's great to see you, buddy.
All right, pal. I'll talk to you later.
Take care. Bye.